Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Howard Williams, the Government Accountability Office's Chief Information Officer. Howard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jason. Glad to be here.
Well, it's always interesting to talk to the administrative side of an audit agency or an agency that does a lot of audits, I should say, and investigations, because your role is a little different. You're supporting those people who we talk to all the time, but we kind of are looking underneath the covers on this one. So let's just start at the beginning, discuss your role as CIO of the GAO and how you support the GAO's mission.
I am the managing director for the internal IT shop that supports GAO. It is the role of my particular unit within GAO to provide all the IT infrastructure so that mission staff can perform their audits and conduct their mission work.
It seems so simple, but there's a lot going on because GAO is while not a huge agency like the Department of Defense or VA, you have a lot of different pieces going on. So from a CIO's perspective, is it a fairly similar job from other CIOs, or do you have more complexities?
I believe it's probably the same. I have to tell you, I've had two careers here, and the first one was in the military in the U.S. Army, and my second one's been here at GAO. So I haven't gone to a lot of other agencies or other enterprises outside of government to see specifically how their IT shops are organized. I believe it's very similar. I have the traditional stuff that you would think in an IT shop. So we have the data center, and that's all fine and good. And we have the desktop management and providing all of the desktops to all of our staff. And I have also all the phone systems and the video conferencing systems as well as doing applications development and doing the information system security for the entire agency. The one thing that might be a little bit different from other agencies, other entities out there, is I also have the publishing piece for GAO. And if you think about it, GAO is a publishing house. We do a lot of original work doing performance audits that eventually result in a published product. Well, the IT shop publishes that product. So I have that function as well. Because we also have a lot of the agency's discretionary dollars that we spend, then I also have my own budget shop, acquisition shop, contract shop in order to facilitate working with the agency's budget shop, acquisition shop, and contracting office as well. So there's a lot going on here. It's a lot of balls that I have to keep up in the air. I think in traditional sense, I'm very, very similar to probably many other shops, except for perhaps that publishing piece, which might be a little unique for an IT shop.
So a lot of vendors who listen to my show are going to be very excited when we get to the part of the discussion around how can vendors work with your office. But we'll make them wait to the end and listen to the whole
absolutely,
show.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Before you go there.
Them along here.
So talk a little bit about how did you end up at GAO? You said you were with the U.S. Army, you retired, and then you came to GAO. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So talk a little bit about what you did for the Army.
Spent 21 years, almost 22 years in the U.S. Army. I was an air defense artillery officer, and the next question will be, how did air defense artillery officer get to be the CIO of GAO? I'm not sure if all of your listeners would understand the Army's personnel system, but it's a dual-track system. So you have your primary specialty, air defense artillery for me, and then you have your secondary specialty, which was ADP at the time, automated data processing. Once I reached a point in my career, I earned the, or was assigned, I should say, the secondary specialty, ADP, and the Army was very good to me. They actually sent me off to graduate schooling in order to get a degree in that. So I'm a graduate of Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, RPI, with a computer science degree. And then from there, what the Army will do is alternate your assignments, one in your primary specialty and one in your secondary specialty. So I've had a three-year utilization tour right after I got my master's degree at West Point, teaching and being a course director in computer science at the military academy. And then I was also went to the Joint Staff, and I was IT plans officer there on the Joint Staff for 3 years. And then I also went to our Personnel Command, which was at the time in Alexandria, Virginia here. And for about 2 years there, I was the senior IT plans officer as well.
So it sounds like when you went to GAO, it was almost a logical choice, given you'd been maybe not title of CIO, but you've been working in the IT world for a long time.
I have been. And it was something that I always had interest in from when I was an undergraduate and was going to school to get my bachelor's. And I'm a graduate of West Point in 72. So at that time, they did not have majors. All you could do was sort of get the equivalent of a minor. They had a very broad curriculum at the time, but my minor was probably more in information systems or ADP at the time. It wasn't well defined at the time. So I was always had an interest in it, and when the Army gave me an opportunity to actually go and get a master's in it, I jumped on it.
Very nice. And then once you retired after 22 years, you ended up at the GAO. How?
It's all about networking, isn't it? That's what I've been
told.
Yeah. So what happened was that I made known that I was retiring, and I started passing out resumes and whatnot, and had a number of interviews and whatnot. But I had a classmate from high school, if you can believe it or not, that I'd kept in contact with after all those years. And she was actually a director at GAO. So she grabbed my resume and passed it along to the CIO at the time. And said perhaps he might be interested in my resume. And he called me in, and we had a great conversation. And that's how I got to GAO.
Very nice, very nice. It's always interesting the way people kind of move around and end up where they end up. Who would realize a friend, a colleague from high school would then come across, you know, all these years later? Talk a little bit about your role as the CIO of GAO. I mean, technology has changed a huge amount. Specifically, it's changed really how GAO meets its mission. Talk a little bit about your role from a strategic side, from an operational side, and how you've kind of helped adapt GAO to those changing technology times.
Clearly, IT is everywhere in the modern enterprise, and where GAO has for long been not necessarily on the forefront, actually probably never on the forefront of the technology, we've made great leaps in order to try to improve our capabilities to provide services to the Congress and to the American public by embracing current IT as best we can. But let me emphasize, we're a little risk averse, and we're hardly ever on the bleeding edge. So what we have been doing recently is to really work on our ability to support what we call our very mobile workforce. So emphasizing a lot of telework infrastructure to support staff who are away from the building or in our remote offices. And we have 11 field offices throughout the country. And our enterprise architecture, which is broken down into about into four segments, we were doing pretty well supporting our human capital segment and our financial segment with fairly modern and improving IT infrastructure and applications and services and whatnot. The one that we weren't doing such a great job in was our enterprise or our engagements and work management segment. And that's the core of what we do here. So over the last 5 years or so, and I have been the CIO since 2010, we've made a concerted effort to improve that. So those systems that we use in order to manage all those performance audits and engagements that we do that we're well known for, the Blue Books and stuff like that, those systems were very, very, very dated, using very old technology, COBOL, mainframe, Power Builder, stuff like that. It was time to bring them into the 21st century. So that's what we've been working on in order to improve our ability to support the GAO workforce here as they pursue these performance audits. It has been something that's been very very rewarding and very collaborative, because in order to do that effectively, then I had to sort of change the way we thought about our applications. So we went away from the waterfall approach in development, because most of the, a lot of those systems are custom, and we went to an agile approach that has proved to be pretty successful, so that we're showing on a repeated basis functionality that they can put into their hands and use, and then we go and we tweak it and provide that much more functionality in steady segments. So it's been a good approach, and I think it's been fairly well received here. You know, there's always the problems of change and change management. But I think overall, I think the GAO management and ultimately the GAO staff are finding it to be a value and improvement over what they've had in the past. Also very core to what we do is document management and records management, and that's also pretty important subjects in the federal government. And we have a dated system that we're still keeping functional for our document management system. And based off of that, then we customize the development of an electronic records management system. But that is, in my opinion, our analysts might not always think so, because it does require a little care and feeding. But in my opinion, it is one of the strengths of GAO. So in one system, one central authoritative system, they can get all of their documents and have an electronic record for the entire engagement and create that electronic record for the entire engagement. And I think that's pretty powerful.
All right, a lot there to go over. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk and more about Agile and talk a little bit more about your office. My guest today is Howard Williams, the Government Accountability Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Howard Williams, the Government Accountability Office's Chief Information Officer. Now, Howard, before break, we were talking about kind of some of the way you support GAO, and you brought up the idea of agile development. And as you talked about getting functionality into the hands of the users and tweak it, then add more functionality, I thought you were going to tell me some good data points. I was very excited to hear you know, it used to take you 6 months to deliver functionality. Now it takes you 6 weeks or something. So give me a sense, how much of an impact has agile made on the GAO when it comes to delivering for the performance audits and engagement systems?
Typically, and I'm not going to say this is the exact average or anything like that, but typically with the waterfall approach, and I think all your listeners are probably very familiar with it, the requirements phase of itself could be extended months and months and maybe even a year or something like that, depending on how complex the project was. And then development and then testing and whatnot, I mean, it could be a year or more before they actually saw something. And then by that time, what they saw wasn't necessarily what they wanted, because, I don't know, perhaps their requirements had changed and the conditions had changed and whatnot. So with Agile, we're very happy to go to that, because you're going to establish a baseline capability very, very quickly. It might be 3 months, 6 months, something like that, to get that baseline. But then after that, at least here at GAO, we've gone to two-week sprints, so that every 2 weeks, we can provide additional functionality and lines working iteratively with our business users, functionality that they need, that they want at that particular point in time. So we're very excited about the use of Agile, and we continue to explore its use in replacing our core management system for our engagements and with other projects as well. So it's become pretty embedded with us right now.
And that was actually my next question around how much are you using this beyond this one engagement system? And or have you set up kind of an agile development training? One thing that when I talk to other CIOs within the government is everybody's looking for agile people who understand it, who can do it. So how have you able to kind of close that gap with the training and the understanding and comfortability with agile?
What we did was to have this has been going on for 5 years or almost 6 years now, So what we did was early on, as I was telling my staff that I wanted to move to Agile, we put together some seminar type things, brought in some trainers, did it as a group training in order to get our heads around the whole Agile process and to educate ourselves. And then we've also have additional training that we can send staff off to as needed, but not as much. We really tried to do it as a group so everyone would be hearing the same thing at the same time. So my group director in charge of that did a great job of changing the thought process for our IT shop in terms of Agile. And so let me go ahead and tell you a little bit about how we're structured, because this was just not federal staff, a combination of federal staff and contractor staff. So that where my federal staff do the business system analysis, I actually have contractors who will actually do the hardcore development and whatnot. So we brought everyone along on that same journey in order to get this thing turned around.
Now, is that difficult to bring everyone along? Because you lose people, people retire, people move on to new jobs. Was that a concern that you did this massive training and then all of a sudden you're going to get these kind of drips and drabs of people leaving?
Not at all. I mean, one of the advantages on the contractor side, at least, is that, you know, you tell them what your requirements are and they go fill it based on what your requirements are. So that was never an issue. I've got great retention here within GAO as a whole and within my IT shop. And then as when we do have people who leave or retire, okay, then again, I have an opportunity to make that one of the requirements, and that's what we look for. So I'm not having a problem with getting the people in who understand Agile or training those staff who are here to understand Agile and to take advantage of the benefits of Agile.
And I definitely want to go back to the staff makeup. But before we do that, talk a little bit about the changes you have been making to the performance and audit system. You said it was an old system using COBOL, mainframe, Power Builder. Is it using modern technology now?
Definitely. Right.
It has to be, right?
It has to be. I mean, anything other than COBOL mainframe has got to be more modern and effective than that. COBOL, a great system, I don't know, three decades ago, but it had its limitations. So, yeah, it's a web-based user interface, which is the norm. A lot of Java, a lot of Oracle on the back end and stuff, a lot of services going on. So, yeah, much more modern technology than the previous technology.
Well, almost anything would be.
Yeah, that was the easy one.
You could go to green screens and it'd be a little bit better.
Right.
But, you know, those COBOL, it's funny because people talk about COBOL and the Social Security Administration maybe has an unfair reputation as having too much COBOL. But if you noticed, that's the one place that we haven't heard too much about cybersecurity breaches. It's a whole different topic, I know, but the COBOL can be a little more secure, so to speak.
Yeah, it probably can be.
Can be is the key word
yeah,
there.
Right.
The other system you talked about of maybe that needed an upgrade is the document management, the electronic records management system. You said that one's old, maybe not as old as the COBOL one was, but talk a little about your plans to upgrade that system.
I don't have any definitive plans right now. I just know that I need to do it. So that's one of the to-do list probably 2 years out right now. Suffice it to say that where I have a document management system now, I need an electronic enterprise content management system. So something that is more encompassing than what we currently have now. I'm very pleased with what I have now, especially the way that it has held up over the years. It's probably 14 years old, something like that, with upgrades with the software and stuff. But the original implementation was probably in the late 90s is when the thing came in. But again, the way that we've used it, and I think that's the key thing here, is that it's sort of pretty much mandated to be used for all engagements. That is the authoritative record is our document management system. So all of the analysts use it, and therefore we all have it in one place, and it can be retrieved. Now, they might question just how easy it is to retrieve it, and I understand that, and that's why we want to upgrade to a true ECM system. But it has worked well for us. And we've done some, we've made some upgrades through the years in architecture. At one point in time, we had this system in all of our field offices, plus at headquarters, and we were doing the document management and the record keeping over the wide area network. That became pretty slow. It was slow in the far-reaching offices that we had in the Seattle and Dallas and Los Angeles and some of the other locations. So what we did just recently was to consolidate those instances of our document management system back to our headquarters data center. So it's consolidated now. So now they don't have that latency and connections. The other thing that helped us to provide a better user experience, especially for those in the field, was to implement VDI, Virtual Desktop Infrastructure, here as well. And we're in the midst of that right now. And I think that's another major IT initiative for GAO that's going to have great effect, benefit for GAO for the years to come. So now, for the entire agency, we're moving to VDI. And because we're only throwing up pixels and stuff to those far users, they are having a much better user experience there. So we're pretty excited about that as well.
All right. Well, I'm going to go back to the VDI in a second. But before we do that, just real quick, talk about how many federal employees, how many contractors are in your office, and what's your IT budget for 2015?
I have about 105 federal staff who work in my unit. And contractors, I come in around 130 or so. So the contractors outnumber us, okay? But that's where we get many of the more technical skills set to support GAO.
And your IT budget for 2015, roughly?
We typically come in just under 10% of our the GAO budget, and the GAO budget's around $530 million. So we're coming in around $50 million or so.
All right, very good. Nice chunk of change there. Hopefully it's enough to get your work done. And it's interesting to see the one-to-one contractor to Fed ratio, just about that. You don't see that too often in the government.
Something that we've had for quite some time. It has changed a little bit. It's reduced a little bit over the last 4 years, 5 years or so, especially with sequestration and whatnot. I couldn't afford to keep as many as we had, so that's a lower number than what we had previously.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into some other priorities, including that VDI implementation. My guest today is Howard Williams, the GAO Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Howard Williams, the Government Accountability Office's Chief Information Officer. Now, Howard, before break, you give us a little bit of a tease of one of our big priorities is a VDI implementation. So talk about that effort and some of your other priorities you're hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months.
VDI, we're very excited about it. It's been a couple of years in the making, pilots and demonstration capability and pilots, and now we're going to a full implementation of our entire workforce here, and that's about 3,400 actually, desktops that we need to populate. So we've been at it since probably April or so. And we're just about done with rolling it out, and of course we're tweaking it and enhancing our capability to improve the user experience. And we'll probably be at that for a while since no deployment is ever perfect. So we've got our work cut out for us as well as in order to tweak it and give them the best user experience that we can. It has a number of benefits that we're looking forward to. As I said before, we have a number of field offices out there. So VDI, and the goal was to make the user's experience in the office and in a telework or a remote location the same. And VDI can do that for us, and that's why we're very excited about it. Some of the other things that we're excited about VDI is just the idea of a little bit better control over our data and our information. Since the desktop is in the data center, then they don't necessarily have to have their GAO-issued notebook in order to gain access to their desktop, okay? So that's pretty exciting for them because they don't have to go lugging around their notebooks necessarily in order to still maintain their own customized and personal desktops. So those are all typical benefits of VDI, which we were looking to exploit and to deliver to our users. And so far, it is going well, not without some difficulties, but, you know, that happens in IT shops, and that's what you do. You go ahead and troubleshoot issues when they come up, find solutions and fix them, and then go on until the next issue comes up. And we're certainly very happy with VDI thus far, and we will continue to endeavor to make it even better.
So let's talk a little bit about that VDI effort. Is it a thin client or a zero client, or is it a desktop on a stick, like a PC on a stick? How does VDI work for you guys?
The way it works for us is a thin client. So our notebooks, and by the way, that's another initiative, is that we had these very old and ancient notebooks that we're now about to deploy a replacement a notebook for them. So that should help. But the idea is a notebook with a thin client that essentially has the operating system and the browser in order to get to the VDI environment.
And you were saying that if someone doesn't have their notebook, they can still get to the VDI environment, so they could potentially download it on a personal laptop or desktop computer as well?
We've not restricted the use of a personal device in order to get to the VDI environment. But the desktop that they're working off of is not their personal end-user device. It is that VDI desktop that's in our data center. And what we do is we restrict actually downloading from that VDI environment to any external media device.
If I work in a GAO field office, and let's say if I am working from home one afternoon and I log on using my regular computer, my home computer, I can get to that VDI desktop through my home computer. But again, I can't download any data, but I can work off the data center. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And is that something that a lot of the employees were asking for, or is that kind of a side benefit of VDI because VDI brings cost, security, control, a lot of those other benefits that are many people first think of?
Well, it's not the primary. I think it's a secondary benefit that is well received by our user community. So they don't like lugging around stuff if they don't have to. Okay, they will, of course, if they have to. But given the flexibility to use a personal device at home, a lot of people are really liking that option.
And I think that's important because, you know, having that flexibility makes such a difference. Do you expect to save a fair amount of money from moving to VDI, or at least do you expect to see some cost avoidance?
We did not necessarily go into it expecting to save a lot of money. There's a possibility. I mean, as an example, when we just went out and bought our new notebooks to replace aging notebooks. The last time we did this, I think we spent like $6 million, okay? Well, we spent about half of that this time because we could reduce the power, the capability that's needed in that notebook this go-round because VDI doesn't require it. It's got a thin client, you know? Get a browser, get to the VDI. We've taken advantage of that type of opportunity.
And talk a little bit about that notebook refresh. One of the things that I hear from a lot of CIOs is the looking at tablet computers or some kind of combination tablet notebook. Did you guys look at that, or were they not powerful enough and you had to go back to the more traditional laptops notebook?
We did a study with our customers here, our users here, and we threw out the idea of tablets. And I said that. I went around on a roadshow to all the internal units here in GAO, anyone who wanted to listen to me, and most of them did. And I told them that with VDI, the promise was that you could connect with just about any device, to include tablets, iPads, even smartphones. You know, it'd be really wacky user interface. You know, the screen's not big enough, but you could do it. And we actually tried out the tablet format to see if there was any real interest in it. It pretty much came back no. They needed the keyboard, they needed a larger screen, and the tablet wasn't really working for our user community. So we went with a more traditional notebook.
Interesting. And notebooks have changed so much, as you said, over the last 5-6 years anyways, that it's going to be lighter, more powerful. Even though you don't need the power for the VDI, the fact is they still will be more powerful and probably easier to work with.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing about the mobile device issue, we talk about laptops, you talk about VDI. Is mobility another big factor, another big priority for you around smartphones and other types of devices? Whether tablets won't work, but are there other reasons why mobility is something that you guys are putting a focus on?
We do. We've had a program out to provide an MDM solution for it. It's not a requirement. It's something that staff can opt in to. We would provide the license. They, of course, had to provide the service in order to connect for email, for calendar, for contacts, that type of thing. So we provide that for a number of years to help those who are in a more mobile state to stay connected, and that's been very, very well received. Don't have any spare licenses running around at this particular point in time.
And is this kind of a BYOD look? Because, as you said, they could use the MDM, and it's an opt-in to. So if they download the MDM to their smartphone or tablet, personal one, then they could do work, again, email, calendar, contacts, and such.
Correct. That's the approach at this particular point in time.
Mm-hmm. All right, very nice. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk about big data. GAO's lifeblood is the data. So we can talk about how you guys are helping out the auditors and investigators with the data. My guest today is Howard Williams, the Government Accountability Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Howard Williams, the Government Accountability Office's Chief Information Officer. Now, Howard, before break, we're talking a lot about your priorities. We're talking about mobility and VDI. One of the big priorities at GAO has to be big data. Data is the lifeblood of the Government Accountability Office. Talk a little bit about how you as a CIO are supporting auditors and analysts and investigators in terms of data tools and other things around big data.
This is becoming a pretty important topic for GAO. We've always been interested in data. GAO, as a matter of course, in our performance audits, goes out and does original work that often involves data that's collected from the agencies that we are doing our engagements on, our audits on. But big data is more and more becoming a topic of interest. Our Comptroller General, Gene Dodaro, has tasked his engagement teams within GAO to determine how best to adopt and to use big data technologies in our work. So that is ongoing now. So I'm not about to tell you that GAO has a big data solution and give you all the specifics about that. We're feeling our way through this thing, just like many agencies and many companies are doing that, and probably lagging a little bit in its exploration. But we have a concerted effort on right now in order to do that. The team is now, that particular team that he's put together, is now developing a concept of operations around advanced analytics and big data, trying to understand the data handling and data preparation and advanced analytics and data visualization. So all those things are being considered by this team. One of the next steps that's going to be done is taking that concept of operations, that CONOPS, to compile a listing of business capabilities. So then, at that particular point in time, they'll perform a gap analysis of those capabilities against the current GAO, our agency's IT software solutions. So we know that there's going to be a gap, probably a big gap, but we want to know what that gap is so that we can then sort out a strategy to address those deficiencies or gaps in our capabilities. So that's sort of a high-level snapshot of what we're trying to do. And again, it has the attention of the Comptroller General, so this isn't a bottom-up thing. This is more of a top-down as well as a bottom-up, because there are a number within GAO who are asking more and more about our capabilities with big data and advanced analytics.
What's the timing on this? Because it sounds like this, from the capability analysis to the gap analysis, you guys will end up with some kind of need to buy some tools. That's where I can foresee this going.
Sure. And I'm sure everyone listening to this will come to that same conclusion as well.
I hope so, right?
You know, the fact of the matter is that we have a number of data analysis tools now. And that we've had to procure and to use in the way that we are currently using data. But I think what the CJ is asking for is, well, what else can we do? And do we still, or do those tools have the functionality to provide those capabilities? And we'll probably find that we're probably lacking somewhere. And then it will be a prioritization of those requirements that are generated from this analysis. So you're right.
All right. So from a timing standpoint, do you have any sense it's a couple months away? It's a year away?
No, it's probably a year away.
All right. Yeah. So that way vendors can start bugging you now and then have a whole year to bug you.
Well, I think a couple have already.
All right. Well, they wouldn't be doing their jobs otherwise.
They
understand
be,
that.
Man. You're right there.
Another piece of this is innovation. As the CIO, you are always under the gun to what's the next greatest best thing. As we talked a little bit about big data. Talk a little bit about how you ensure innovation is coming to GAO.
That's getting out there and being familiar with what's going on in the industry. So taking a look at the different forums and the different seminars that are put on out there. I personally have my favorite. I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm a Gartner Symposium person because that gives me a great opportunity to go and hear from a lot of different experts and a wide variety of different fields or different tracks on IT, and to help me sort out where we want to go. And then from that, you know, VDI came out, and then from that, our next generation telephony, I forgot to tell you about that project, it has come out in order to improve the technology that GAO is going to be using for years and years to come. Also, from those types of engagements, and it's not just me, my staff, we use training and the webinars and going to in-house training as much as we can to get away. Those opportunities allow us to see the innovation that's out there, and then for us to come back and see how it can be applied to the requirements that we're getting from our user community.
It's interesting you bring up Gartner, because I think a lot of federal CIOs actually go to the Gartner Symposium, enjoy the Magic Quadrant events that they do. Do you find that GAO is more open to innovation? Because one of the things that I think, you know, is really what GAO does is they tell people how to improve, how to change. And innovation, in many regards, should be about changing and improving.
I definitely know that GAO is open to change. But let's talk about the rate of change or the speed of change. And I think that, like many organizations, and I don't know this from actual experience, since my experience in the federal government here has been just GAO. Well, we just don't want to be on that bleeding edge of change. So we want it to be more mature, and as they say on the hype cycle, you know, coming out of that trough of disillusionment and up to the more mature state. So change is good, but not too fast. Is that sound about right?
I think that's about right. I mean, some people want to be on the back end of the cutting edge or the leading edge, and some people want to be well after the leading edge has passed them by. But I think you know, most CIOs will tell you they want to be confident in change versus, you know, jumping off the end of the bridge, so to speak.
Correct.
We're almost out of time. Before I let you go, let me ask you about vendors. We've talked a lot about them. We've made fun of them a little bit. So what should vendors know about working with your office?
Vendors should know that we work off of requirement. The best time that they can work with us is when we're actually reaching out to them. And we do that. We are the federal government, and very seldom do we like to just go out and do a sole source. That's a dirty word around here and in the federal government. It's not illegal if done correctly. But so what I'm saying is that as we get our requirements and we start these initiatives, we give the vendors an opportunity to come in and hear what's on our mind, what we're looking for. We do the RFIs. We do the industry days, especially with our big projects. And they should know that they will get an opportunity to talk to us once we have a requirement. When we don't have a requirement, then, you know, we're very, very busy trying to provide the IT services for our agency.
A little longer. You have a lot going on, a lot of good, interesting things. But we'll just have to have you back on the show sooner than later.
Jason, I would love that. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to talk with you this afternoon.
Excellent. My guest was Howard Williams, the Government Accountability Office's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.